out with these words. Now Joshua was old, advanced in years, and the Lord said to him, "You are old, advanced in years, and there remains very much land to be possessed." Now, Joshua was one of those who had gone to spy the land whom Moses had sent out. And he, along with Caleb, brought back the minority report where they said, "We're able to go and take the land, and we should do that." We mentioned that all of the spies were in agreement as to the character of the land. There was no dispute about that, that it was a land which produced abundant fruit and vegetation and was just a place where there was thriving agriculture. There was no dispute about. And also there was no dispute about the nature of the people who were occupying the land. What did they say? What were these people like? Big people, giants. And so the stature and the character of the people, well, Joshua and Caleb saw the same thing, and there was no dispute about that aspect. So in terms of the aspects of evaluation of what they observed, really all the spies were in agreement as to what it was they saw. The disagreement came with respect to what they should do now, having observed and seen what they saw. And so the majority said, "Well, they are too much for us. We can't win this battle. We can't prevail against them." So they then were looking at themselves and comparing themselves to the other group and said, "We are inadequate for this task." Caleb and Joshua said, essentially, "With God, we're well able to do this, to go ahead and take this land, and that's what we should do." But of course, we found out that they didn't prevail. And so they had that long journey in the wilderness because of that. And as a consequence, after they engaged in a number of battles, then they began to take the land. And here we talk about the distribution of the land. Now, the land which Israel occupied was on both sides of the Jordan. Now, which side of the Jordan did God promise land for? On which side did he promise the land for the people? I'm sorry? The west side. Yeah. On the west side of the Jordan, he said, "This is the promised land, the land that I have promised for you." But 2.5 tribes didn't get their allotment on that side of the Jordan. So they got their allotment on the east side of the Jordan. So God made a promise and said, "I have this for you," but they end up over here. How's that? What happened? You remember what happened, right? They requested that they get their allotment on the east side of the Jordan. We talked about that at some length, that they made the request and it was granted, and they had to make an agreement that they would go with the others and be with them, the soldiers, until they occupied their land, and then they could go back and occupy the land that had been assigned to them. So on the east side of the Jordan then, there we had Reuben, Gad, and what was the third one? One half the tribe of Manasseh. Right. So those people got their allotment on the east side of the Jordan. And that's the rest of what we see here in chapter 13. It says there. Now, in verse number 2, it says, "This is the land that yet remains, all the territory of the Philistines and all that of the Geshurites from Sahar, which is east of Egypt, as far as the border of Ekron, northward. Then it goes on giving all these details. But notice here in also in number, verse 3, the five lords of the Philistines. They refer to the Gazites, the Ashdodites, the Ashkelonites, the Gittites, the Ekronites, also the Avites. And from the south and all these different people who are there. In verse 7 it says, therefore divide this land as an inheritance to the nine tribes and the half tribe of Manasseh. And then it says, with the other half tribe of the Reubenites and the Gadites, receive their inheritance, which Moses had given to them beyond the Jordan, eastward, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded them. So they had all of their allotment there. Now, in verse 14, he begins talking about the west side of the Jordan and who's to occupy that. And we have all those different tribes. There are a lot of specific details that are given as to where these property lines ran. And, you know, just reading that, for me, I'm thinking, okay, I read it. But then when you look at a map, you can kind of see how the different ones are laid out. And maybe I should have flashed one up here. But I'm sure most of you, probably everybody, has a map in the back of the book. They want to look and see where these tribes are located, where their land was that was given to them. But some of the descriptions are given here. But I want to read a little bit here at the beginning of verse, beginning of chapter 14, about how this division was to be done. In verse number 1, these are the areas which the children of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest, Joshua the son of Nun, and the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel distributed as an inheritance to them. So we looked at who was involved in actually carrying out this distribution, who was supposed to be involved with that, and those are listed here. You will see Eleazar the priest, Joshua, and then the fathers of the tribes. In verse number 2, their inheritance was by lot, as the Lord had commanded by the hand of Moses for the nine tribes and the half tribe. So it said by lot, but we need to understand that when it says by lot, it doesn't mean just random chance. But this was a method that was used, but ultimately, obviously, God is controlling the outcome of how it is. It's in one sense like the idea that God says you do certain things, but obviously he's controlling the outcome of it. But there's a responsibility to do what he has said to do. And I think that's one way we can consider that. And then again, it says here, for Moses in verse 3 had given the inheritance of the two tribes and a half tribe on the other side of the Jordan, but to the Levites he had given no inheritance among them. And that's where we spent a lot of time before, just talking generally about the Levites. And the different places in the scripture where it talks about what God's special provision was, they were granted cities to dwell in, but not inheritance for the land. They have special responsibilities. What were those special responsibilities? I'll get to you in just a second. What are the responsibilities of the Levites? No. You say conquer land? No. Tabernacle? Did somebody say tabernacle? Okay, they were to care for the tabernacle, for all the special things related to the tabernacle. Did you say that? Oh, you just not said it. Okay. Right. So they had a very significant responsibility that they were required to carry out. And God says, your provision is to be from the people and not from being one who had been granted a portion of the land as the other tribes had been granted. Okay, now was there a question?
I read Joshua this week and it refers back to this verse a lot, but I guess it's still not clear why the Manasseh
was the half tribe. Well, it says, Manasseh, half of the Manasseh tribe decided they wanted their land on the east side of the Jordan. So when Moses gave to Reuben and Gad, half of Manasseh wanted to be a part of that. So they got their inheritance there. Right. But then the other half of Manasseh didn't get their land until the east side of the Jordan. So that's why I said the half tribe of Manasseh. Right. Yeah, so. Why did the tribe split? Well, I don't really know the answer. But you know, we all the time ask, well, why did churches split? I'm just saying that to say, as a thought provoker, that in any kind of a group, there can be divisions that cause folks to split apart and go different directions. So, but I don't know the specific details as to what their particular thing was. If it's here, I missed it, as to what the specific was, as to why that tribe divided. Well, you know, when they list the tribes, they say 2.5 on the east and 9.5 on the west. Right. Yeah, so. Well, Ephraim had, yeah. Well, I think I see what you're saying. Right. Yeah, that's right. That's right, because Manasseh and Ephraim were the sons of Joseph, and then it just says tribes. So you're thinking those descendants of Manasseh being on the one side and descendants of Ephraim being on the other. Oh, that may be right. I appreciate that. I would have to check it out more to know for sure if that's the correct answer to that, but that very well may be. So I appreciate that help. So what we have then here then is all this land distribution. Now, we remember that the land was a central aspect of what God was doing and how he was working through Israel, that the land had a very great significance. And we see that. And we also see here, go down here just a little bit more in chapter 14. Because Caleb here gets his allotment, and I just want to read again this portion where Caleb speaks and makes a request as to what should happen here. If we go to verse number 6, the children of Judah came to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, "You know the word which the Lord said to Moses, the servant of God, or the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea." So he's talking about how many years ago? I mean, a long time ago, 45 years ago, right? He said, "I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me," this is verse 7, "from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord." The thing that stands out that we can't really miss is the heart of the man Joshua compared to the heart of the 10 other people. And I said the 10 others because Caleb and Joshua were of kindred spirits with regards to this matter. But now Caleb is speaking about what happened there. So he said, "Moses swore on that day, saying, 'Surely the land where your foot is trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you,'" notice this, he says, "you have wholly followed the Lord my God." Those are really interesting and powerful words. Because. Now, so what happened as far as the character of the people and occupying that land? What had happened as to the character of those people? What had happened? The answer is nothing. They were the same. There had been no change in the character of those people. They were still the strong and people who would be feared by others. They were the same like that. But so he says here that Moses swore because he said, "You have wholly followed the Lord my God." talk about a testimony. Caleb isn't boasting. We don't want to miss that. He's telling the objective truth of what happened. And when he says he followed after the Lord, he followed after the Lord. In verse number 10, he says, "And now, behold, the Lord has kept me alive." How did he remain alive? The Lord kept him alive. In just reading that, we can say, oh, well, anybody who's remained alive, the Lord kept him alive. But remember, what happened in the wilderness? What was their purpose for dwelling all those years in the wilderness? So that what could happen? There it is. So people could die out. So the carcasses could fall in the wilderness. All of these people who didn't want to do what the Lord said. 20 years old and upward. That's what the journey was all about. Those people died. God could have kept people alive if he chose to do that. Joshua is giving credit to God for his survival and saying, you know, the Lord has kept me alive. So he says, and now behold, I have kept, the Lord has kept me alive these 45 years, ever since the Lord spoke this word to Moses while Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now here I am this day, 85 years old, as yet. And we always get a little bit of a smile when we get to this particular part, because we think 85, you know, that's not too old, I guess. But for most of us, we think, well, that's kind of old. But here's what he says. I am as strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me, just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and for coming in. So, we'd all like to be able to say that when we get to 85. You know, I'm just as strong now as I was when I was 40. But most of us are not going to say that. Probably I doubt that anybody here will actually be of that state. But that's what Joshua said about himself. But he's given God the credit. He said, God has preserved me. He's kept me. He's kept me alive. He says, now therefore, and this is an interesting expression. He says, now therefore, give me this mountain of the Lord, which the Lord spoke in that day. Give me this mountain. Then he says, for you heard in that day how the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and fortified. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out as the Lord said. Key words there, the Lord be with me. The Lord being with me, I can drive them out, is essentially what he said. So he said, give me this mountain. That phrase I remember, it throws me back to years ago. Before we got this building, and that was a phrase that was used in the prayer when we came to look at this building before we had in our bid for it, along with several other properties that we bid it for. But I still remember distinctly that prayer being prayed, Lord, give me this mountain. It was the idea that we were asking the Lord to grant to us in his favor, if he chose to do that. But that phrase was used there, and I just that just came back to my memory as I was looking at this. And I think about that each time, you know, when I go back and read this again. Several times over the years I've thought about that. So Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb the son of Jephunneh as an inheritance. Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb. And then it goes on to end the chapter here. It says the name of Hebron formerly was Kirjath Arba. Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim. Then the land had rest from war. Now, in the next chapter, we go on to see the tribe of Judah and the distribution of Judah. Now, we want to take note of Judah. Judah was had a special position among the brothers there. Now, I want to go back and look at a couple of a few verses here in Genesis, in chapter 49, where we see that these tribes are mentioned there. Now, these are Jacob's prophecies concerning his sons. It's interesting how a verse they, I was just thinking about another memory from a good while ago about this chapter. But one of the things that happened, though, is that since that time, I was down at Bob Jones University for, I think it was called the World Congress of Fundamentalists. And Ian Paisley spoke on this chapter. I think he spoke for an hour and a half. I mean, it was a long sermon. But that stood out to me in special ways. And I have reflected on that over the years. It was a blessing to me. I don't know what everybody else thought about what he had to say. But anyway, in this chapter 49, he went through the whole thing. And it's like I can still hear some of his words ringing in my head here. But the first place where I want to go is that there are just kind of a few things here that I'm going to point out here. The tribe that Judah would get would be surrounded by enemies. It would be a land that would be suitable for vines and vineyards and that sort of thing. But the more salient and a point that I wanted to emphasize is that Judah was in the line of the Messiah. And so we wanted to take a look and just have a little bit of a diversion there. Let's look at Judah. In verses 8 and 9 of Jacob's prophecy, he said, "Judah, you are he whom your brothers shall praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He bows down. He lies down as a lion. And as a lion, you shall rouse him." We will see here that in the distribution of the land, that Judah gets the largest portion of the land. And we'll get into a bit more of the details about that. But also in chapter 49, if you look down to verses 11 and 12, you'll see these words. Let's see, I think I have the correct ones I wanted. Binding his donkey to the vine. Mistake, that's not. And his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washes garments in wine. His clothes in the blood of grapes, his eyes are darker than wine, and his teeth whiter than milk. Still referring to Judah there. Now, going back up now and taking up verse number 10. It says there, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes." Those are words that were kind of resounded to me from that sermon long ago. It's like I could still hear that man saying those words out. "The scepter shall not depart from Judah." So that the Lord Jesus came, the Messiah, through the line of Judah. So we have something of great significance here. I want us to go to Matthew chapter 1 and look at a couple of verses here just to see here in the scripture what I'm saying by way of summary. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac begat Jacob. Jacob begat Judah and his brothers. Judah begat Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Perez begat Hezron, and Hezron begat Ram. Ram begat Abinadab. Abinadab begat Nashon, and on it goes. But Judah, here it says, is in the line of the Messiah. That is very, very significant. I want also to look at Luke chapter 3 and read a couple of verses over there. In chapter 3 of Luke, in verse number 23, now Jesus himself began his ministry at about 30 years of age, being, as he was supposed, the son of Joseph, the son of Eli. And then, if we will, we could read all through those, but where I want to go is to get down to verse number 33, where it says, the son of Amminadab, the son of Ram, the son of Hezron, the son of Perez, the son of Judah, the son of Jacob, the son of Isaac, the son of Abraham, the son of Nahor, and it goes on, to the son of Adam, the son of God. So Judah had a very special place. So here in Joshua, in chapter 15, it talks about the lot of the tribe of the children of Judah, according to their families. And it begins here to tell where they would be, what their occupation would be, which land they would. It says, the border of Edom at the wilderness is in southward from the extreme southern boundary. And their southern border began at the shore of the Salt Sea from the bay that faces southward. Then it went out to the northern side of the ascent of Akrabim, passed along to Zin, ascended on the south side of Kadesh Barnea, passed along to Hezron, went up to Adar, and went around to Karkia. From there passed toward Asmon, and went out to the brook of Egypt, and the border ended at the sea. This shall be your southern border. Then it talks about the east border. Was the Salt Sea, as far as the mouth of the Jordan, and the border on the northern quarter began at the bay of the sea at the mouth of the Jordan. The border went up to Beth Hogla and passed north to Beth Araba, and the border went up to the stone of Bohan, the son of Reuben. Then the border went up toward Debir of Bara from the valley of Achor, and it turned northward toward Gilgal, which is before the ascent of Adumim, which is on the south side of the valley. The border continued towards the waters of Enshemesh and ended at En Rogel. And the border went up by the valley of the son of Hinnom to the southern slope of the Jebusite city, which is Jerusalem. The border went up to the top of the mountains that lies before the valley of Hinnom westward, which is at the end of the valley of Rephaim northward. Then the border went around from the top of the hill to the fountain of the water of Nephtoah and extended to the cities of Mount Ephron. And the border went around to Bela, which is at Kirjath-Jearim. Then the border turned westward from Bela to Mount Seir, passed along to the side of Mount Jearim on the south, which is Chesalon, went down to Beth Shemesh and passed on to Timnath. And the border went out to the side of Ekron northward. Then the border went around to Shikron, passed along the Mount Bela, that extended to Jabneel, and the border ended at the sea. The west border was the coastland of the great sea. This is the boundary of the children of Judah, all around, according to their families. That's really quite interesting. One of the things that it says to me is that what was happening here in this distribution and assignment of land was not a haphazard process. That God had a plan, and he laid out what his plan was. And there were borders to the allotments of the tribes so that they were told what their portions were. So they had responsibilities within their borders, each tribe, which in some places we see how those responsibilities weren't properly satisfied and there would be problems between tribes because of that particular thing. But the distribution of the land has begun. And so we'll continue on and look at these others now, distributions of land, and see what else goes on here in the book of Joshua here. But one of the things that we're going to notice is that while there is great victory and that a lot had been accomplished in subduing the lands, what the people did, the tribes of Israel, was never up to the standard. Now, what do I mean by that? The tribe of Israel never fully accomplished the full control of all the land that they were supposed to have. They didn't fully carry out the responsibilities that they had. In some places we'll read it says that they didn't exterminate the people when they were supposed to, but they just put them in subjection, a subjugation, and allowed them to live among them. So they did some of what they were supposed to do, but they didn't do some other things. And we are going to see as we go through and we look at scriptures, we see a lot of the consequences for what we may call partial obedience to what the Lord said to do. And that posed all kinds of problems. All kinds of problems. Well, that's a challenge for us. I've often heard it said, and somebody will say, of what you understand, of what you understand yourself, of what you're supposed to do, how much of it are you actually doing? And of what you yourself understand of what you're not supposed to do, how much of it are you actually doing? So we see in the inadequacies of Israel, the inadequacies of ourselves. And I'm saying that to say this, that what Israel needed to do was to maintain full dependence upon God. Because that's what Caleb was saying. He says, I can do this, but not by myself, not alone. Not in my strength. He said, but I can do it. How? With God I can. And that's the challenge for us. To understand that our dependence is upon God, not upon self. Now he has allowed some of us to have certain skills, abilities, certain wherewithal, certain capabilities, it might be tempting sometimes to think that we can do something on our own and not be dependent upon God. But in as much as we do that, we're not doing what we should be. And that means that we're not getting, as somebody used the expression, God's best. Which is what our goal is, to get that. So I hope this has been a help for you. It's a challenge for me. And my understanding is is that we are all, essentially, we are all the same. The scripture says, there has no temptation taken you, which is not common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above what you are able. And he will, with a temptation, provide a way of escape. He's there to help. But our dependence is to be upon him and not upon self. Let's just close in prayer.